Some of the most vulnerable humans among us are BIPOC adoptees, Black, Indigenous, people of color, who have suffered from family separation and ethnic displacement. Here's a statement from the website of BIPOC adoptees. Many of us are immigrants who have also been separated from our homelands from injustices stemming from imperialism and colonialism. Many of us are Native adoptees who experience an acute kind of loss from the history of violent settler colonialism on Turtle Island that has resulted in familial and cultural loss, the degradation of the earth, and the continued oppression of Native peoples. We stand in solidarity with our Native siblings. End quote. My guests are Liana Soifer, co-founder and executive director of BIPOC Adoptees Voices in Oregon. Welcome to The Exchange, Liana.
Hi.
And Lisa Butler, a board member of BIPOC Adoptees Voices. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having us.
Well, Liana, let's start with you. Before we get to your organization and the work that you do, I'd like to get a sense of your own background and what led you to co-found BIPOC Adoptees.
Yeah, thanks for having us today. So I am identify as a Korean transracial adoptee. My lived experience being adopted into a white family and growing up without access to my birth culture definitely shapes the work that I do at BIPOC Adoptees Voices.
And Lisa, let's hear your background story. What led you to become a board member for BIPOC Adoptees?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a domestic transracial adoptee. So I was born and raised in the state of Wyoming. I grew up in a white family and a lot of isolation. Wyoming is maybe about 2% Black. I'm biracial Black. And so, grew up feeling really isolated, questioning my identity, relationship issues. And so once I got involved with BIPOC Adoptees, it was just felt like a homecoming for me. And I've been working with the organization ever since. They haven't been able to get rid of me.
So when you say you're biracial, your parents are?
So I have my biological mother is white and my biological father is Black.
And what were some of the challenges that you experienced growing up?
Oh, wow. A lot of different things. I'd say some of the biggest challenges were related to sort of my identity formation. I didn't have access to any genetic mirroring, any racial mirroring. I didn't have access to a lot of knowledge about our Black history, certainly not my own personal, biological and ancestral generational history. I was fortunate in some ways in that my mom was a school teacher. She really embraced knowledge and reading and learning. And so I became a fixture at my local library and, would just do as much research and learning as I could. And my mom really supported that. That's not the case for all transracial adoptees. However, a lot of us don't have access to resources or have parents that necessarily support that identity formation. But I think that's one of the biggest challenges I personally faced was the formation of my cultural identity and just my connection to my culture and who I am as a human.
Liana, did you find that you faced a similar circumstance, a similar challenge?
Yeah, similar and definitely different. I would say that definitely issues around my own identity, loss of cultural, that cultural disconnection. Being raised in Eugene, Oregon, a very white community, into a white family, not a lot of mirrors for me growing up. I would say that a lot of the struggles for me have come around sort of what we would consider milestones. So definitely through the teenage years was definitely a struggle around identity, fitting in. Lost, just not having that sense of belonging in adoptee community. And then even into adulthood, right? Deciding to get married, having kids, all those things, all those kind of major milestones have definitely have been an ongoing journey, I would say, around my adoption. So.
So you are Korean.
Yes.
And your parents are, what's their ethnicity?
They're white.
So did they not have an interest in learning about the Korean culture?
So I would say that they did as much as they could. I grew up in a home that was very multiculturally diverse, and that my adoptive mom is Jewish and my adoptive dad is Catholic. So we grew up celebrating both holidays. And we had friends through the University of Oregon. We had like Korean family, like exchange families that we would get together with. I have been reunified with my birth mother and part of my birth family. And so my parents have definitely been supportive of that. But I would say, and also very educated around like mental health and education. So like having that knowledge and awareness was definitely there. But I would say even with having those supports, it's still been definitely a struggle. And I even think even more so like growing into adulthood and finding my own community. So yes, I would say they did the best that they could with the information and knowledge that they had, you know?
So it sounds like these are well-meaning people. Obviously, they adopted children that were in need, and then they made their lives comfortable, but at the same time, they had a narrow lens of society through this cultural lens of whiteness. Am I getting that correct?
Yes, yes. This is Lisa. I would say yes, you're definitely getting that correct. And at the same time, our experiences aren't the case for every adoptee. I just want to make sure, you know, the listener understands that not all parents are supportive of our cultural identity formation and interested in supporting us even in reunion.
Well, let's get into that. My guests are Liana Seufer, co-founder and executive director of BIPOC Adoptees Voices in Oregon, and Lisa Butler, a board member. So, Lisa, tell me more about that. A lot of parents who adopt children of a different race and culture are not necessarily interested, and they're not, accommodating to the needs of the child in that regard. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So I definitely think that, as you mentioned, there are, much like I think my mother and Liana's parents, you know, well-meaning folks who adopt children. And I wanted to just point out, too, you know, we're finding out more and more now that not all children adopted were actually in need, especially when we look at things, international adoptions through, for example, Korea. I just recommend everybody who's listening to watch the PBS documentary about Korean adoption that was released fairly recently. It details just some things that were going on there where children were being actually stolen. So I just, again, want listeners to understand that not all children being adopted are even in need of care, per se. So I was in a situation where I was. My biological mother and her family chose to not tell my biological father and his family about me and to instead adopt me out because I was not going to be white. That was their decision. I didn't have any other option. My parents did provide me with, you know, a life that I'm not sure what otherwise would have happened to me. However, I'm still left with these, all of the losses and grief that come with adoption, regardless of whether or not I, quote unquote, needed a home or not. And additionally, just, yes, there are parents who I think just don't necessarily understand the need for those biological, ancestral, cultural connections. I think sometimes it can cause the adoptive parent to, you know, feel less than or feel not as connected to their child. So I really think it's a, you know, it depends on the circumstance, but certainly more and more information and effort needs to be put into, I think, educating adoptive parents on what even a, you know, same race adoptive child needs some special care that I think it's important adoptive parents understand.
And so,
I'm not sure if you want to add to that, Liana. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, you segue right into, Liana, you co-founded BIPOC Adoptees to mitigate and address some of these issues.
Yeah, so I was going to add, kind of like echoing what Lisa said, is that the reality is that adoption is framed sort of as a beautiful rescue story, right? And the reality is that it's far more complex than that. And I will speak to my experience. We are always speaking to our own lived experiences. They were very, we might have similar experiences, but very different. And I will speak from my own lived experience that, the information I've learned about my birth family is not one that I was told, and even to my adoptive parents, did they know the situation. So for much of my life, I've been told that, right, my birth mother could not take care of me. She was too young. There's stigma in Korea attached with having a baby with, before you're married. And that wasn't the case. And so there's a lot of gaps, right? There's a lot of unknowns. Just having the ability to access your records is so hard. It's complicated. It takes resources. It takes money. And so those things are definitely like ongoing barriers, right? There's a portion of adoptees that have been sent back to their birth country because they didn't get citizenship, right? Like, I didn't get my citizenship until I was 5. And that's because, not because the fault of my adoptive parents, it wasn't at the forefront. People weren't telling them, yes, your Liana needs to get her citizenship. So like, the other piece I want to really hone in on is, for me, it's around our organization is really trying to improve mental health outcomes for our community, marginalized community. And, I think what's hard is that, through all the years of therapy, misdiagnosis is like when I was young, talking about adoption and therapy as like the root cause, the trauma for the issues that I was having wasn't in discussion. And so I think the most important thing is that we're having these discussions about race. We're having these discussions around the adoptee experience and really listening to those that are most impacted because, for much of my life, again, this is based on my experience and all the years I went to therapy around mental health, misdiagnosis, and I think back of how much that's impacted me, right? And now, finally, as an adult, right, with my own family and kids, I have autonomy and more self-awareness from learning and listening to other adoptee community members about how to, like, advocate for yourself. I think, like, that's the number one thing we can do for ourselves as adoptees is learn how to self-advocate and have autonomy and agency over our own experiences.
Well, we only have about 30 seconds left, unfortunately. Lisa, I'm going to ask you a big question. I hope you can condense it. What is success for BIPOC adoptees in the organization?
Oh, wow. I think success for us would be that the narrative around adoption changes, that not everyone who is adopted has a fairy tale story, fairy tale ending. I think that's one of the things that we really hope to accomplish. And in connection with that, we really hope to support our community, the mental health of our community. Our needs are just really high and really important.
Well, you're doing great work. We'll put a link to your website on our website. Unfortunately, we're out of time for today's exchange. Thank you both, Liana and Lisa.
Thank you so much, Mike. We really appreciate it.